Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn. The power within. Damn, damn. Damn.
I have a motto. You know, when you're running a company, the first people or things to get paid, it goes in this order. Your employees are first, your vendors are second, and you reinvest third. And everyone says, well, then how did you get paid? If there's anything left at the end and you've already built a foundation where you can handle a bad week, a bad month, a bad few months, a pandemic, something, then you start to take a little bit from the company, because the more you invest in the company and you invest in your people, the bigger it will grow. And people will see that you're investing in them. You can't just take everything out of the business. Then you're only as good as what you did last week. And there's no true value.
Man, I don't know if you can add much to that. That was great. Look, that's some of the best advice you guys are going to hear anytime soon. The only thing that I would say, my greatest mistake, hands down, of building businesses was not building myself. Along the way, I did not take it seriously. I did not understand the value of becoming a leader. You know, taking the understanding of, look, it was probably 6 years ago before I ever knew what the word EBITDA and P&L and all this kind of stuff was. And you would think that after, you know, almost two decades in business that I would have mastered the mathematics behind business. But the reality is I hadn't, because I didn't realize that I needed to grow myself and build myself along the way. And every time that I had a major breakthrough in business or in life, it was on the other side of a massive growth curve. And a lot of times your team members are some of your best teachers. My former controllers and CFOs and all these guys, they had steward hearts, and they would sit down and teach me a lot of the mathematics behind it, which made it easier for me to make better and wiser decisions on how to invest resources, when and how to let someone go if need be. They taught me the value of having a great team. They taught me the value of pouring into that team and showing them that you actually care. Gosh, I was in business 10 years before I ever told people I used to be homeless. I was terrified of it, ashamed of it, guilty of it. And the last thing I wanted to do was be in an environment where I let that insecurity showcase itself in front of other people. But what I discovered was, is it wasn't until I was honest with my team and honest with myself that all of a sudden I had buy-in and actually had connection. So I think number one, if I was going to tack on any advice, is never build a business without building yourself as part of the process. That's A, number one for me. Been a huge impact. Hope that helped.
Amazing. I love that. Mark, did you have anything you wanted to add?
I love all of the advice, and I totally echo what Jason said. I mean, when I started my business in 2006, I was barely scraping to get by. By 2009, we had the recession. I lost my staff. I lost all my clients. I burned through all the cash I had on hand. I went out and borrowed money and hired a business development person and paid them for 6 months and did not pay myself. I would take each paycheck, I would pay the income tax on it, and I would slip it into a drawer, and I would never cash it because the company didn't have money to pay me. And when I see people in startup, when I see people who want to jump into something, they may not realize that for the first, well, typically 5 to 7 years, but let's say for the first 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to feel like you're treading water. You're going to feel like you're not getting ahead. You're going to feel like, why am I spending all this time and all this effort and all this energy pushing this thing forward and getting zero results? But what happens is at some point, there's this switch that goes off. And just like that, all of that work, all of that effort, all of that energy that has been going on behind the scenes suddenly starts to turn into fruit. It suddenly starts to pay off. And then one day you go, hey, maybe I'm going to take a cash bonus. Maybe I'm going to do, should I do? But as Jason said, you reinvest, you reinvest, you reinvest. The people that you're looking at who have everything that you want, they are 10, 15, 20 years into this. So make sure that you're willing and able to do the long run, willing and able to reinvest, and don't get too impatient or too greedy too early on. I'm Mark, and I'm complete.
Awesome. I love that. And before we move forward, I see that Hala is here. Hala is the host and CEO of Young and Profiting / Yap Media. Hala, welcome. Do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about your background and a great piece of entrepreneurial advice you have.
Cool. Sure. Hey, everybody. My name is Hala. I'm the host of Young and Profiting. I'm the CEO of Yap Media. We're a social media and podcast agency. Jason is one of our awesome clients. Always love supporting his rooms. So in terms of a piece of advice, I would say think about how to build the right team. I know that if I didn't have my team here at Yap Media, I wouldn't be nearly as successful. And it's all about picking the right people who are happy, hands-on, hardworking. Those are some of our values. And making sure that they have clear processes to repeat so that we can scale our business. So I would say that is my one piece of advice today.
Paula's a rock star, by the way. So, you know, she is the princess of podcasting. See, I got that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Awesome.
Hey, Kate, let me jump in. I want to give I've been grinning ear to ear since the beginning of this weekend. And for those that do follow me, you've probably seen it on social media. But I want to share a quick story before we kick off, because this is the world we live in, that if you believe enough and you work your ass off, these are the kind of things that happen. So I grew up, we already talked about it, didn't have much. But I grew up in Phoenix, and then I lived in North Carolina, and my dad was from Detroit, and we were the biggest Detroit Lions fans, and we were the biggest Barry Sanders fans ever. And so recently, my son turned 11. Now, I live in Michigan now. I have season tickets and a suite with the Detroit Lions. I put solar on Ford Field for the Detroit Lions. I have a relationship with several of the Detroit Lions players, and Barry Sanders is an influencer who was my hero growing up for our company. But Saturday, on my son's 11th birthday, I had Barry Sanders come and coach flag football at my house with a couple of the Lions players. He brought all these kids. I had over 100 people at my house. Yes, we asked them if they had their shots, so please don't ask. And people were social distancing. It was outside. And let me tell you something. It was so amazing. I told my son, like, you're going to have kids and you're going to be able to show them the pictures where you played football with Barry Sanders, one of the greatest ever, at our house on your birthday, signing football. I mean, it was amazing. And, you know, to have that kind of, I've done a commercial with him, but to have that kind of life and be so happy for it and to share it with my family. I mean, I've worked my ass off. I got to talk to Isaiah Thomas today on the phone about coming on the podcast. Like, that's, if you don't know who that is, that's the Bad Boys basketball team. Like, this is the kind of stuff when you work hard enough and you believe in something, things do happen. You just got to stay grinding. I just wanted to share that story because I've been grinning ear to ear. It was a great weekend. I got to go see my boy, Joseph Newgarden, who's an IndyCar champion race in Detroit. He got second. He won the pole. I got to go in the pits back then. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I would have never done. Living in the trailer park, my in-laws making fun of me, kids at school talking shit because I'd fake Tommy Hill figures. You know, I didn't have an education. Like, I went and earned that. And so, and my kids get to live through that and I get to live through them on this. It's exciting. So I want to share that story.
Awesome. Well, with that, Stephen, do you have a similar story? I know Jason just wowed us with his, and I know you have a lot of really cool experiences. And was there anything that you wanted to share to kind of hop off on that?
You know, I think the most interesting one to me, now this is more of a family story, but recently my daughter is about to have her second child. And they were asking the little boy, they were asking Jason, my grandson, they were saying, hey, what do you want to call the baby? And he goes, well, Stephen Scoggins. Well, what if it's a girl? Stephen Scoggins. And you know, again, it warmed my heart. You know, I think it goes to show what Jason was talking about. It's not only doing what's right in the marketplace. It's not just doing what's right in business. It's doing what's right all the time. Just be a person of integrity and be a person of character. And you never know who's watching and who you're modeling, quote unquote, success for, no matter what it is. And I think for me, that's the greatest term of success is when your family admires your efforts, that they want to be supportive of your efforts. You know, because like Jason and myself, both of us didn't have a lot of support. We had to find that from within early on. And now it's not in short supply to have people that believe in you and care about the mission. And you got to grind it. You just got to go. I mean, you cannot give up. You cannot throw in the towel and you cannot think tomorrow is never going to come. You just got to keep going.
I love that. Mark or Hala, do you guys have anything you wanted to share to hop off on that?
No, I don't have anything to share on that, but I do have a question for Jason and Stephen, knowing how successful you are. I was just interviewing, I can't even remember his name. He was really good. And we were talking about routines. I don't know why I can't remember his name. It was a long day, but we were talking about routines. And I would love to know if you guys have a morning routine that you do, or is there some habits that you do that really keep you productive and really keep you in the right state of mind. And I'm sure the name of this guy is going to come up in a second while you guys tell me your answer. So why don't we start with Jason?
Yeah, I am a creature of habit, meaning I have to have a schedule or I get major anxiety and pissed off super quick. I have 1 to 10. I don't have any gears after that. So I have to have everything planned accordingly or I freak out. My wife's the complete opposite. And then one of my four kids, and congratulations, Stephen, I'm getting ready to have a second grandkid. I just got my grandson a month ago and I got a granddaughter.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, jamming. And I'm only 41. I'm a gilf. I'm a gilf. That's what I am now, not a dilf anymore. So a grandpa I'd like to feed, in case anybody was asking. But, you know, my routine, I have to have that schedule. One of my kids are the same way. Like, if she's like, what are we doing this week? Next week, she puts it on her calendar and she's 14. So I can relate with her. Everyone gets mad at her in the house. I'm like, look, I'm the same way. So I have to live by the calendar and I'm pretty strict on it. But I get up every single morning. I usually get my kids up for school, unless it's summertime. I take the dogs out, put them back in. And then I get dressed. I either pick up a coffee or take an energy drink. That just varies on the kind of day that I think I'm going to have. And I have to go to the gym, even if I sit in the parking lot, which happens a third of the time. And I'm taking phone calls. It is me time. It's like meditation. I'm out of, not doing work. You know, I'm not at home dealing with family. Like it's me. And then I work out 66% of the time. It should be more. And then I go do cryo, which I love cryotherapy, 3 or 4 times a week. And what that does is that resets my mind, gives me the endorphins I need. I don't run. If I'm running, there's a problem. Everything's in, you know, there's a fire or something's going on because I'm not a runner, but I do lift weights. And then I do cryo to make up for my cardio so I can burn some calories and feel like I accomplished something with the endorphins. But I have to do that to set my day. Days that I don't, I can feel the irritableness pick up and then my mind gets foggy. And so I struggle when I don't. I try to work out, you know, I play for a tie. I work out of 7 days. I probably at least go to the gym 6 times and work out 5 because one time I'll like, oh man, I screwed up talking on the phone. But I eat like crap, which I need to eat better. So I stay the same. So I play for a tie. I play to win in life and I play to win for my family. But when it comes to my health, which I got to do a better job of, I play to keep a tie. Go ahead.
I just want to, you're making me crack up. You always say that you play to keep a tie when it comes to your like working out and losing weight. It's
I terrible. Love ice cream. Like I love candy bars. I love ice cream.
You need to get that heart rate up. Come on.
I mean, I tried intermittent fasting. I'll do intermittent fasting. I'll lose 8 pounds. And then Saturday hits and I'm like, pizza, who wants a milkshake? Nobody wants it. And I get a milkshake. Like,
place to maintain.
It's so bad. And my son, who's 11, he's a badass. He's like, Dad, you work out every day and your body doesn't change. And I said, that's a good thing. He's like, no, like you're not changing. I said, dude, I'm playing for a tie. I eat what I want and I work out.
Yeah. Well, I remembered this guy's name. His name is Greg McKeown. It was really rude that I forgot his name. And he's the author of Essentialism. And it was a very big book. And he talked a lot about priorities. So it's great that you work out. But do you set aside like this is this amount of things that I'm going to do today? Like these are the 6 things and prioritize them. What do you do there?
So I have my calendar and I challenge everybody to do what I do. When I take a shower, don't try to use your calendar. But if you can't, when I take a shower, that's beside my calendar. I'm like, I don't have my calendar on me. I'm in the shower. I'm scrubbing up and I'm soaping up. But that's me time to think. And I tell myself, literally, I've been doing this for like 2 years. I love it. What 2 things am I going to accomplish today that aren't on my calendar? It could be I'm going to call an old friend. It could be I'm going to call my mom or I'm going to wake up my daughter and give her a kiss on the head. Whatever it's going to be, right? I'm going to do 2 things that I don't have on the calendar that are going to be impactful. And I challenge myself. Now, sometimes I don't get to those 2. I get 1 done. Every now and then, none. And then I'm upset. I'm like, damn it, I got to do better tomorrow. But when you try to do 2 things every day, you know, that's 14 things a week. That's 60 things a month that you wouldn't have done if you wouldn't have taken the time to plan while you're in the shower, while you're starting your morning. You know what? These are 2 things I want to add to my day to get done. And it works. And it could be work-related, but mostly it should be personal-related, something that's going to be impactful and meaningful in your life outside of work.
Yeah. Stephen, I'd love to hear from you. What are the habits or routines that you've put in place to make sure you're super in the mindset to be productive? And then do you have some sort of a way to prioritize your work?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I just loved everything Jason just said. I was cracking up the entire
time.
Yeah, so my routine is very tactical in nature. I discovered this because I struggle with ADHD. So I have the ability to hyper-focus or basically not focus on anything. So I learned a long time ago that the quickest way to keep me in peak state, whatever you want to call it, whatever phrase you want to use, in order to keep me there, I had to have a routine. So every morning around 5 or 5:30 in the morning, alarm goes off. I wake up. I spend about the first 15 or 20 minutes giving thanks, giving prayers. I'm a man of faith, so I spend a lot of time praying to God, and that's just as me. And the next thing I do is I quickly grab my gym bag. I head off to the gym. And just like Jason, that's my me time. Now, my drive to the gym is about 20 minutes. I drive to the gym. It takes me 20 minutes to get there. I have 20 minutes of cardio, and then I start my lifting process. Well, that 40-minute window from the time that I leave my house all the way to the time that I start lifting is when I'm actually doing personal development work. Remember, I've said earlier that the greatest thing you could be doing is building yourself on a regular basis. So that 40 minutes of time is solely dedicated to improving my mind, my body, and my spirit all in unison. And what I do is I'll focus on one pillar of life. So on Mondays, for example, I focus on my emotional pillar. So my emotional regulation, my emotional state, the way in which I communicate to my children, my spouse, like how do I mature that? On Tuesdays, I'm focused on my financial pillar. How am I going to be setting myself up to weather, you know, things like COVID and all this kind of stuff that comes down the pipeline? And then after that, I go through the process of just listening to some motivational music while I'm doing the lifting part. From there, my day then begins after a quick shower at the gym. I then head to work and I start basically with yesterday's priorities focused on today's activities. So yesterday's priorities focused on today's activities. In other words, at the end of my day, one of the exercises I use a brain dump. In that brain dump, I'm already telling myself what are the highest priorities for tomorrow. So I don't wake up at 2 or 3 a.m. saying, oh my God, I forgot this. Oh my God, I forgot this. Because I learned if I don't do that, then I will have those moments because I do have so much going on at any given time. And then I break my meetings and my days up into roughly 30-minute segments, sometimes 15, but primarily 30-minute segments. And because I own multiple businesses, Monday's a flex day for me. Tuesday is my Journey Principles Institute. Wednesday is my CHE or my construction business. Thursday's back on the JP. And then Friday's back on the real estate development side. What I do is I'm trying to leverage the power of intentional focus at any given moment to create the most leverage possible. It's actually something I've learned a lot from our good friend Mark Drager down there at the bottom. If you guys aren't following his stuff, you need to be checking him out too. That dude's a rock star.
At the end of the day, I learned that from David Allen. He talked about open loops. And basically, if you don't get things out of your head, you just keep thinking about them. Even you don't realize that you're thinking about them, but it just keeps running and running in your head. And you waste so much energy and thought on things. If you just write it down, you'll stop thinking about it. So I think that's really good advice. So you guys are like really successful. You're billionaires, basically, or running billion-dollar companies. And I think it's easy for people who are in your situations to, you know, have the time to have a morning routine and have the time to meditate and things like that. But for somebody who's, you know, up and coming, like,
no, I'm going to cut you off, Hala. I'm going to cut you off. When I didn't have shit, I still found time to go to the gym.
Yep.
That was my question. I was going to ask. So for right now, I feel like I'm still finding time to work out for sure. I love to work out. But in terms of like finding time to like meditate, it's like, I don't have time to meditate. I'm just launching.
Sleep's overrated.
You don't have time. You don't have time not to meditate or get yourself centered.
That's correct.
It will 100x your impact and your ability to do more and take on more responsibility and actually build a multi-million dollar, you know, 10 times over brand. If you don't center yourself, you are going to get lost in the daily activities that the world throws at you. If you center yourself, then you are telling the world how you were going to respond to it, not the other way around. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but that's
no, I agree 100% with Steven. You have to fight. I mean, you take a shower, right?
Of course.
I hope you shower.
Most days.
Right.
Well,
most days. Mark, I'm telling you, if you can find time, I had a doctor friend of mine that told me my triglycerides were bad, and he was straight up. We played poker together as a doctor, and this was, I don't know, 7 years ago is when I started working out, because I never worked out a day since high school. And 7 years ago, my son was three, and I go to the doctor, and I played this adult flag football thing, and they called us the belly gang. I mean, we were out of shape, you know, in our mid-30s, and, you know, all these real jocks that were in Canadian Football League or ex-football players were playing this adult flag football team. We joined because we knew some people, and when they were up a lot of points, they're like, all right, belly gang, come in. And I'm not, I mean, my belly's not big, but, you know, we were like old and out of shape. So I went to the doctors because I was out of breath, and I'm like, I think I might be having some issues. And he's like, dude, your triglycerides are high. You're going to die. If you don't get it together, you're going to die. And it kind of freaked me out. You know, four kids, I'm like, what? So I started going to the gym, and it took time. But meditating and resetting your mind is more important than the gym. I think Steven's exactly right. You have to find time to do that. The gym's important, but more so, you need to be able to just reflect and reset everything and take time to do that, because it does 10X, 100X your business. You have to.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. I wanted you guys to drill that in to everybody listening and for me, for my own selfish reasons. So thank you guys so much. Kate, I'll throw it over to you. I know we've got a lot of people on stage.
Yes, thank you. All right. It looks like we have a couple questions here. Anna, we will start with you. I see you are the founder of your own company. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that and then have your question for Jason or Steven?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on stage. This is actually my first time being on stage. So here I am.
Welcome.
Thank you for inviting me. Thank you. Yes, I'm the founder of a technology project management organization, and we support organizations implementing technology solutions. And we have a special emphasis on organizations that do some sort of social, environmental good for the world. And so I guess one of the questions I want to ask all of you is, what role do you see in business as far as it comes to doing good for the world?
I'll go last. I mean, what my company does is good for the world, but I'll go last, Steven.
Yeah, so I'll let Mark go first and then I'll go off to Mark. That's cool.
No one wants to answer this question. Listen, I think that as long as ideas and profits align with good, then yes, good will take place. I think realistically, if profits and growth do not align with good, it's very, very hard to make a compelling offer in the market that people will certainly vote for when they're being polled or surveyed by marketers. But then when it's sitting on the shelf and no one buys it because there's something that's slightly cheaper, or because social good just costs too much for employee benefits, or whatever else it is in a capitalist system. I don't know if this is popular to say or not, but as long as those things don't align, it's very hard for people just to spend money on things that they feel good about. I'm Mark, and that's my...
Yeah, I'll piggyback on that. So here's my view on business. I actually believe that all business is a state of overflow. In other words, most good is done in the world by the vast majority of small business owners, you know, businesses that are not corporately owned or publicly traded as of right now. Now, the reason that is because businesses mirror their leaders, mirror their entrepreneurs, mirror their founders. And money does nothing more than make what you more of what you already are. So if you're already a philanthropic person with a giving attitude, you're going to become more giving, more philanthropic in nature. If you are somebody who is solely self-interested and solely selfish, then you will become more of that along the way. I believe that business in and of itself is a ministry by nature. So vast majority of what I'm doing now is directly connected to all the suffering and all the trials and tribulation, just like Jason, just like Mark, just like every successful entrepreneur I know that's trying to do good in the world now, came through a certain level of expertise that was only gained through actually witnessing and experiencing certain levels of sacrifice along the way. The reason I say all that is because everything that I'm currently doing today is to go back and serve the person I used to be. I hope that helps.
Bam. Well, I'm not scared of the question. I want to hear what they said, because my business, Power Home Solar, we have a motto called BAM, building a movement, one panel, one customer, one employee at a time. And we are empowering people to own their power, control their cost, never be left in the dark, but most importantly, go green and help save this planet, to make our move on that. Like, we all know electric cars are coming out. We all know that we don't have enough energy as it is. We know burning coal sucks. It's poisonous. It's not cost efficient. We know nuclear plants cost too much. They're hard to build. And we can talk politics. I don't hide from where I stand. I'm right center. I'm in solar. I love solar. I love renewable energy, but I also am conservative. I think businesses should flourish. Therefore, they can reinvest in their employees. I told you guys when we started this clubhouse, Rule number one is pay your employees. Rule number two is, you know, pay your vendors. Rule number three is reinvest into your company. Then if there's anything left, pay yourself. So, you know, certain conservatives that aren't selfish that throw money back into the business to grow more employees. You know, during COVID, we had 800 employees when COVID started. When it ended, we had 1,700. We did that because we gave an opportunity for people to be safe, you know, to social distance, to still be able to provide for their family. You know, we offered a product that was out there. I think it is business and CEOs and entrepreneurs' job to try to make somewhat of an impact. And I think that we're doing a good job because the youth right now is all about going green and about clean air and about clean water, which is so important. So I think, you know, when I grew up and I was a kid, it wasn't pushing it as much. They had some stories about hairspray was going to open up the ozone and we were going to die. Those things were rumoring around. And, you know, I don't know if solar will change climate change. That's not why I got in the business, but I think it's a lot cleaner. You know, what really pisses me off about utility companies is coal ash. In North Carolina, there's a lot of coal ash in certain lakes and people get sick. And a certain spot over in Lake Norman area, there's cancer clusters. And so, you know, I've got friends and family over in that area that are getting thyroid cancer and eye cancer like crazy. And they call it a cluster. There's like 91 cases out of 10,000 people. And it's supposed to be one out of 10 million that get that kind of cancer. So there's issues there, but that's because they have coal ash that gets in the groundwater. So it is our job to find a way to make profits if it aligns, like Mark and Steven said, to make a difference in the world, and people will pay for that. People want things to last for our children and our children's children. And, you know, I think that we're doing a better job in today's world than we did 20 years ago. That I truly believe, but we still got a lot of work to do. You know, and gas companies and oil companies got to go on notice. We're going to have to utilize that for SpaceX and space travel because electric cars are coming and renewable energy is here. Bam.
Amazing. Thank you, guys. Anna, did that help answer your question?
Yeah, that was amazing. I just have one follow-up question, which is, what are your thoughts about benefit corporations?
I have no idea what that is.
There are organizations that actually have liability in ensuring that their organizations are dual bottom line. So they're financially profitable and they do some good for the world and they're accountable to their stakeholders for that.
No, I think that's fantastic. I think anytime you can do something good for the world and still be profitable, that's a double thing. Because when people say you have to have profits in order to grow, unless you've got government assistance or you're nonprofit, you're getting some kind of thing to carry the tote the line, you have to have profits in order to grow. So I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, the only thing I would add to that is I think that's threefold. So it's not just benefiting the shareholder or the owners. It's benefiting the team and benefiting the community. Each of my businesses have various levels of profit sharing generated to help the team have some what we refer to as self mentality or self ownership mentality. But we also have community outreach that we do with each of the businesses that I own. And that I personally, at this stage in the game, take very little out of my businesses in an effort to make their lives better just because of where I'm at in my life now. So I think we're all saying the same thing. I think we're all pro team, pro community, as well as pro business.
Being not pro like environment of the world, if anyone ever goes and gambles at casinos, I mean, I used to, I go to play craps. I love poker, but I play craps. That's like the person who comes and bets against the pass line. So for those that play craps, you understand that means you're playing against the people. You never want to play against the people. You don't want to be that company or that person that's like, I don't care about the world. And you're throwing, you know, Whopper packages out the window. And I believe that we're at a point now you will be judged and, you know, you will be held accountable if you're reckless like that or your company's like that.
Awesome. Anna, did that help?
Perfect. Thank you both.
This episode is sponsored by Podbean Advertising Marketplace. Podcast advertising is one of the most cost-effective ways to advertise your product or service. Just like you're hearing this, thousands of people could be hearing your ad. For much less than radio or other media, you can reach local listeners with podcast advertising. Podcast awareness and listening continue to rise. In fact, according to Edison Research, podcast listeners have grown by 29.5% since 2018. Chartable reports, podcast listeners tend to have significantly higher household incomes than the U.S. average, and they tend to be significantly more educated than the U.S. average. This is great news because you can run your own ads on podcasts easily for an affordable price with Podbean Advertising Marketplace. Set a daily budget cap, analyze results, and modify campaigns on the fly. And the best part is, these ads are highly targeted. Choose your location, city, state, county, and target by customer interest. Get into the ears of your perfect customer without blowing your budget. Go to podbean.com/trueunderdog. That's podbean.com/trueunderdog to start boosting your business with podcast advertising now. The process is super easy. Podbean can have a professional voice artist record the ad for you, or you can upload your own audio. Again, that's podbean.com/trueunderdog to get your ads on podcasts just like this one.
All right. Up next, we have Melissa. Melissa, welcome. Would you like to take a minute to introduce yourself and ask a question that you think will be helpful for our audience tonight?
Yes. First of all, I want to say hello to Jason, who's freaking awesome. I'm actually drinking out of my True Underdog podcast cup, Jason, as we speak.
Damn.
Best time on the looking forward to having you on mine soon. So my name is Melissa Kirkace. I am the host of Millennial Women Talk podcast. We are one of the top podcasts for millennial women looking to elevate their lives, mind, body, and soul. And I'm really enjoying this conversation. But I would love to throw this question out to Jason and Steven. Both of you guys have shared and have been so transparent about your journey, about that grind, about the struggle. Why did you guys become entrepreneurs? Why did you just throw in the towel and say, you know what, this is too hard. I'm just going to go get a 9-to-5. Why entrepreneurship to the both of you?
I'll go first, Steven, because yours is better story than mine. Mine's good. Yours is great. So, you know, my dad was blue collar, worked at AT&T his whole life, you know, most of his life. And, you know, he worked at a bill print center where they printed bills. And when we grew up in Arizona, we didn't have much money either. We lived next to the neighborhood that had a golf course that had money. We were in the outskirts. We weren't, you know, we didn't have a lot. In fact, he had a 60-4 rule. We had an old Cutlass that in Arizona, it's 120 degrees out. He had no air conditioning. We'd roll down the four windows and drive 60 miles an hour. And that was our air conditioning. Now you can't make it up. But he had a friend of his that opened up a video power store, which was cool right before Blockbuster came out. Like all these video stores were popping up. And they were shutting the plant down where my dad worked. And my mom worked as a cake decorator at Fry's, which is like a grocery store. And so that's all I knew. I mean, I didn't know. I mean, I knew there was rich kids at school and I didn't care. And in Phoenix, it wasn't as judgmental as it is in North Carolina. Phoenix was like how tough you are, what sets you claim was a little different. But growing up there, I watched my dad's late friend, Mike, say, Bill, please don't move. They were in the living room. I was 14 years old. And he said, I'll open up a sub shop for you and I'll get a bakery for Sherry, which is my mom. And I'll put it next to one of the video stores I have because he had like 20. And you guys stay here. And my dad thought about it. And he's like, we'll let you know. And I watched him talk to my mom. And I've always would listen, you know, and pay attention. And he said, I'm worried. I've got two kids with asthma. And I've got 12 years left till they'll give me a retirement package at AT&T. You know, I think we need, you know, just sell the house and transfer to North Carolina. And my mom agreed. And I remember my dad was a little bothered. And I was my younger brother and sister. Sorry, he was a little let down, but he was playing it safe. Right? He wasn't playing to win. So we moved to North Carolina. We bought a trailer. I didn't even know what a trailer was. I didn't know it was a thing, nor do I care. But that's where we lived, was a trailer park. And he bought a trailer and we put it in this trailer park and I went to school. And while I was going to school, people would say things like, where do you live? I'm like, oh, Southbrook. Oh, the trailer park? Yeah. Oh. And my first car, I spent $300 buying. And people would make fun of it. I would be out there armor-alling hubcaps and my car was five colors. And I thought like I was a good looking kid and I could spit game. Things are fine. But in North Carolina, it was like, how much money do you have? Where do you live? Like, that's what mattered. It was weird. Southern hospitality is bullshit. So it was weird. And I didn't like it. And I got motivated. And I started dating this girl who ended up being my wife. And I started dating this girl that ended up being my wife. And her family hated me. Used to tell her that you want to go to his house? He can stick his feet out his window and move his trailer. His parents are poor. Why would you want to be there? That's what her family, her mom and her sister would tell her. And so she would tell me this. So a couple light switches went off and I would help my dad deliver papers at night. And I remember being 15 years old, 16 years old, telling my mom that when I get older, I'm going to build a business. I'm going to have enough money to take a Winnebago and travel across the world. That I was never going to play it safe. I was going to play to win. And so I always had this chip on my shoulder. So anything I started doing, you know, I got great grades in school. I never did drugs, but I got in a lot of fights and I never started fights, but I had a problem with authority figures. I had a problem with people telling me what to do when I thought they were wrong. I could argue with the best of them. And then I didn't fit in. You know, I was a kid from the West Coast where most of my friends were Hispanic. And I moved to a place that there was no Hispanics. It was all black and white. And at that time in the mid 90s, blacks and whites in North Carolina sat at different tables. It was very odd for me. I was like, you know, I grew up in Arizona. We didn't see color. I had black friends. I had Hispanic friends. I had white friends. But when I moved to North Carolina, it was like, this is weird. Where do I sit? Because I had my hair slicked back. I wore Dickies. I didn't fit in. And so I struggled and I fought and got in a, you know, a lot of trouble at schools because I just didn't get along with people. But when I had my first chance to go out and earn a living and make money and start selling, I saw I was so good. I got jobs I probably shouldn't have got because of my skill set and the way I interviewed. But I would not get promoted because I lacked the education and I lacked the age. And so that's what motivated me. That's what inspired me to go, I got to work for myself because I'm handcuffed. I'm not getting promoted. They're not giving me a chance because I'm too young or because I'm male or because of my, I don't have an education, whatever it what was. There was 50 different reasons why back when I was younger in my early 20s. And it didn't happen that I got motivated to open my own business and work for myself where I could create an opportunity for other people and try to inspire other people and do great things. And that's when I opened the home security business. But I always told myself, and I still to this day, I play to win. I don't play to not lose. I don't play prevent. I don't play it safe. I play to win. And I have a thing, it's in my book. It's called Scared Money Don't Make Money. If you're not willing to bet on yourself and you're not willing to put it all on the line, then you'll never be successful because you got to take that leap. And nobody will believe in you if you can't believe in yourself.
That's so true. That's so true. Brought the heat. For me, it's much of the same thing. A lot of the adversity Jason mentioned, I also faced growing, you know, coming from a trailer park, broken home, the whole deal. Grandmother passed away at 11. She was raising me. Parents came back in my life with their own like struggles and whatnot. I went to go work in construction around the age of 11 years old, carrying studs for my father, who was struggling for alcoholism for quite some time. And about the age of 13, I got to witness the man that would become my first mentor as he left a $1,000 tip under a bag of hush puppies or a box of hush puppies at a barbecue restaurant for a single waitress just because she was a single waitress and clearly raising a child on her own. And I watched as he quickly snuck out the door with his wife, got in their car and left. And I also watched as the waitress come over, lifted the basket of hush puppies, took the $1,000 of cash and basically buckled to the floor with her knees crying. And it wasn't but a few days after that that I was on a job site, and this same man, his name was Steve Meyer, pulled me down off the framing crew, put me in his Jeep Grand Cherokee, and sat me in there and asked me a couple of questions that ultimately changed my life. You see, I've always been a hard worker like Jason. I've always been a grinder. I've always been tenacious. I've always been persevering. I'm 5 foot nothing, 100 nothing, but I've always been a gritty kind of like Mighty Mouse kind of mentality. And as a result, I think I had that crazy work ethic where he sat me down in his Jeep and he looked over at me and he said, I got a question for you. I said, okay. He said, what's the difference between a rich man and a poor man? And in my stupidity at the time, I said, well, duh, money. And I kind of tried to laugh it off. And he almost would have slapped me in the back of the head when he said, absolutely not. It's the way they think. The next question he asked me literally pierced my heart. He said, do you want to learn to think like me or do you want to learn to think like your daddy? And from that moment on, I knew that it was possibilities. I wasn't sure how I was going to accomplish it. I wasn't sure where I was going to go or where I was going to learn the information from. But I knew if that man believed in me, even though I didn't believe in myself, that one day I would be able to stand up and be somebody else's Steve Myrick and be the voice to their hopes and be the voice to their dreams and their beliefs and their passions. And I think at the end of the day, all of us underdogs, that's one of the reasons I love Jason, the name of Jason's podcast so much. All of us underdogs, we have all have one thing in common. And it's not just the gritty fight for success. It's the fact that we want to see every single other underdog win. And when you look around this world today, there are underdogs everywhere. And if every underdog would join together, teach their truth, share from transparency, be vulnerable, be honest, we can help millions of underdogs and radically change this world. That's my personal truth and belief. Thanks for having me up.
Damn. How was that, Melissa?
Oh my gosh. I couldn't ask for anything better. That was so inspiring from the both of you. Thank you so much for sharing. Pure fire.
And thank you for coming on. And you were one of my favorite guests. We had such a great time. And you own, talk about your business real quick while you're on here, because this will also be on the show. But talk about your business real quick, because you didn't get to really introduce yourself of what you do. And I'm still waiting to try that, because you know I play for that tie. I get to eat those.
I know, Crunchy Waves, where they're heading your way, by the way, a big, nice box. So yeah, I have multiple businesses, but our latest family business is called Crunchy Waves. It is a flour-based chip. And right now we have three flavors, Frosted Crunch, which tastes like a funnel cake in a chip, the most delicious thing ever. And then cheddar cheese and sea salt. And the recipe stems from my grandmother. She created it in Cuba as a way to make ends meet. And then when they arrived to Miami, she did the same thing. She sold it door to door, and that's what helped her get on her feet. But her dream was really to make it into a business. Unfortunately, she was never able to do that. But my father, which was her son, decided 4.5 years ago to get this product to market. And in August of 2020, we did. And so we sell online and in South Florida in local stores. So thank you, Jason, for that shout out. And I'm excited to send you a box. And anybody that wants a box, go ahead and send me a DM. I would love to send
some
Crunchy Waves.
I knew Steven would want one.
Steven, do you work out just to eat cheat meals too?
Well, I specified cheat days. Same kind of concept, but I try to stay a little further ahead than I was.
I love it. I love it. Well, listen, whoever wants Crunchy Waves, just send me over DM. We'll love to send you guys a box so you guys can enjoy it. But thank you, Jason, for that shout. It means a lot to me, my friend. And thank you for having me, Hala, up here.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Melissa. I do want to jump ahead over down to Julio. I hope I said your name correctly. He's been so patient. I know he has a question for us. He is the CEO of StockNack, a social hub for music discoveries and emerging artists. Very, very cool. Do you want to go ahead and tell us a little bit about your business and then open up the floor to your question, Julio?
Yeah, absolutely, guys. I mean, first of all, let me say I'm loving the paradigm of this conversation. Really adds a lot. Now, as for my business, basically what we do is we help musicians get funding by rewarding every fan based on the impact they're playing on the musician's career. So yeah, we just want to help musicians out and in the meantime reward fans that and listeners that are having an impact and playing a role. So that's pretty much it. Now, before my question, there is something that I wanted to add to Hala's question. She was asking about meditation, and something that I want to add to it is there is something that I think it's a misconception in entrepreneurship nowadays that working more means getting more done, but it's about the type of work you do that gets the most work done. There is a Buddhist monk that once said, when he's not busy, he meditates for an hour. When he's busy, he meditates for 2 hours so that the rest of his time may be much more efficient and effective. So that's just a little bit to add to meditation. I think I've done it for just 2 years and it just multiplied the way in which I behave throughout my day. I think everyone should at least try it and you'll see for yourself. Now, as for my question, guys, so this is something I'm going to try to explain it, but I don't know how to put it into words exactly, but it has to deal with self-sabotage. So what I'm dealing with is I'm seeing that I'm going fast at whatever I'm doing and I'm enjoying every single ounce of it. I think that nowadays just working on changing the world gets you to feel good. And by doing something that is not world changing, you're just doing a disservice to yourself. But in this specific case, I think that I'm being presented with a lot of opportunities in this world, especially right now. I'm raising funding and I'm looking for investors. And I'm seeing that every time an opportunity seems to be bigger than myself, so something that looks that is too much ahead or something that is like, oh, it seems too easy. I've noticed that I tend to self-sabotage a lot by either overcomplicating the deal or pushing the conversation after I get something done that might be very hard to do. And I can't understand if this is a deal of just me having to do this for a while until I raise my status to the point of accepting those things that are coming my way, or if it's a matter of mind framing and there is something that I'm messing up.
Great question. I would say that anytime there's an opportunity out there and you feel like it's bigger than you, you have to find a way. I mentioned earlier, I don't know if you heard, you know, I had Barry Sanders here at my son's birthday party. I've got to meet a lot of cool celebrities over time that I was fans of before. I did a round table with Donald Trump. That was a little like, oh, wow, is this really happening? So that's a big, like, I can't be wowed anymore. It doesn't matter who I meet, Tom Brady, none of that wows me anymore. But you have to train yourself, and I'm just using that as an example, that nothing's bigger than you unless you think it's bigger than you. that you've got to live in the moment at that time. Now, you don't want to be bigger than the moment, but you don't want the moment to be bigger than you. And I'm real big on setting goals at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, and 180 days. So I'm always staying in the moment of the growth. People come to me, what the hell is it like running a company that did 60 million last month? I said, well, it's no different than when we did 48 million, you know, 6 months ago, right? But if you said, you only did like 3 million in the whole year in 2015, I'd say, no way I'm going to do 60 million in a month. There's no way, right? So the 5 years ago me would be freaking out if he knew where I'm at today. But as long as I'm a big believer, you know, there's no elevator in life. You got to take the stairs. As long as you're taking those stairs and you're grinding and you're staying in that 30, 60, 90, 180, any kind of opportunity you see, don't let it be bigger than you and take a shot. That horse doesn't ride by a lot, my man. You have got to figure out if something's riding by and there's an opportunity there, it's something you believe in, you've got to take risk. Nobody that has ever been successful just fell into it. They take a leap of faith at some point. They take risks at some point. And look, there is no such thing as failure, in my opinion. It's learning. But when you don't make a decision, you have forever regret. So that would be my advice.
Yeah, man, I would second that. I'll come at it from a slightly different angle. I'll come at it from a holistic perspective. I personally dealt with a ton of self-sabotage along the way, largely because I was fighting between two masters. I was fighting with the thing that my dad said, Wisconsin's don't get ahead, they get by. And I was fighting against what Steve taught me, which is there's nothing you can't do if you'll put your mind to it and go for it. And many times I would find myself in very, very, very prominent circles, only to basically just kind of sit into the corner and kind of duck my head like I didn't belong there, not realizing that the simple fact I was in the room showcased the fact that I belonged there. You know, Jason brought up not being wowed. Not being, you know, wowed by, you know, people that are quote unquote famous and fortune and all this kind of stuff. You have to decide right now, and I do mean right now, if you were going to be the kind of person who is present in every situation, or the person who's avoidant in every situation. And if you're present for the deal and present for the impact and present for the relationship building, then you just simply need to change your stature, change your stance, and put your chest out a little bit and walk forward in humble confidence. Yeah, I learned a long time ago that if you're going to change the fruit of your life, you have to start with the roots in your life. I had to go back and do a little homework and figure out where some of my limiting beliefs came from to really conquer some of the self-sabotage. But I struggled with it for a long, long time, only to realize that there's no other person on this planet that is any better or any worse than I am. They may have different kinds of status. They may have different kinds of things, but that does not take away from my story. It does not take away from where I come from, what I've been through, and how much I've had to grind. And I think if you stand on your successes and lean into that, the fact that you've been able to do some pretty incredible things and overcome, you'll be able to broaden your shoulders and stick your chest out a little bit and just be patient and be present in the room. And a lot of times you'll find that that actually creates the manifestation of the gravitational pull, pulling people towards you and not away from you. That's my two cents. I hope it helps.
Yeah, it does. All right. So there's two things that clicked in there that I really like, and I'm going to have to just sit with it for a bit. The first thing is the understanding that, okay, it's still a training process, so I can beat myself up for not seizing every single opportunity. And at the end of the day, even if some opportunity passes by, I should at least grab what I learned from it, so that next time I may do better. But the one thing that really clicked in there was this understanding that if the opportunity is in front of me, I belong to this opportunity. Even if it seems random, I just increased my luck by working harder and harder so that this random opportunity may be in front of me. So just matching this present moment as something that I already worked for, although it doesn't seem like it's mine yet, I guess. All right. Okay. That's interesting. I'm going to sit with it for a bit, but I really appreciate your answers, guys.
My pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Julio. And let's move forward. We have Chima. I hope I said your name correctly. I'm so sorry if I didn't. Thank you for being here. What is your question for the panel tonight?
I don't think he's here. Let's move it along.
Okay.
Holly didn't get to introduce herself yet. Holly, do you want to introduce yourself and ask a question that could be relevant to the audience?
Sure. Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Holly Shannon. I have a podcast called Culture Factor 2.0, where I talk about business culture. It's now rating in the top 2.5%, and I'm pretty excited about that because I grew it myself. I'm also author of book Zero to Podcast, and my business is helping businesses and individuals launch their own podcast. So that's a little bit about me. This is actually not my first time. This is my third business that I have launched and scaled. And I find myself sort of in a strange place because I realize that although I've gotten to this point, I'm really craving a collaboration and team environment. And I think actually it was from being on Clubhouse so much that I just felt there's all these amazing podcasters and people in PR and marketing. And I just found myself longing for more. And I'm finding myself at this unique point where I am undecided whether I should try to find somebody with a similar business to mine and see if I can fold in so that I could maybe create something greater and have people to partner with, or if I should consider finding people in different areas, not quite what I do. Maybe they're in video branding and PR or something like that, and create somewhat of an agency model. So I'm sort of at a crossroads. I'm really kind of struggling right now. You know, this past year, just I've been working like a dog. You know, I'm the underdog for sure, but I've also been working like a dog by myself. And I think I'm ready for something else, and I'm not sure what makes sense. Do you have any suggestions for me? I'd really appreciate it. My name's Holly. Thank you.
I think we all go through that. This, as crazy as this sounds, when things are going too good, I get bored. Right. I love challenges. I love, it's weird. I it's not that I like to struggle, but I feel like I need to struggle because I notice when things are going so good, I get checked out. I mean, I have ADHD too. Like I need to be challenged. And when you're sitting at the top, there's nowhere to go but down. So like I tell my kids, I tell the employees, you never want to be the best one in the room unless you are the best one and you are pretending in your head that someone else is better than you to stay hungry. Tom Brady didn't retire yet because he tells himself that he's not the best, even though he's the best, right? So with your situation and what you're doing, it sounds like you've kind of conquered that part of it. You're like, how can I make this bigger? What else can I do? You're kind of bored. I think you need to find something that challenges you, and maybe bringing a partner on that does video and stuff is cool and fun. You need to get excited again. And I've been bored before, and then I'm going to do this podcast. And then it's like, holy shit, a podcast is a job with me running a company. Okay, I'm not bored. Time out. I need to breathe. Well, then I mastered that schedule. I'm like, okay, I'll write a book. And then I finished the book. And now I've got all this time. I'm like, well, all right, I need to find something else to do, even though I'm running a company and I'm doing a podcast. Like, I need that. And every person's different. I need to be pushed. I need to be busy. If I'm not busy and I'm not living, then I feel like I'm dying. And it sounds like in your business, you're stagnant because it sounds like you're bored and you need either bigger challengers or the next step or something different. And I think looking at maybe bringing on a partner is a smart move, or finding a different concept in the business that challenges and makes you hungry. Because it sounds like you've done this before and it's like repeat. Am I wrong? I mean, Holly, was that what it feels like?
You know, the other businesses I've built were very different. I had been in the event space for 10, 15 years. So it was more of a traditional marketing, like large scale conferences and trade shows, more of the live, which we're all craving, and it will have its renaissance now. And then my other business was actually jewelry design. And I did that for a long time, for about 10 years. So they're very different, what I've done. And I've just been building and building this business. And I'm just sort of, yeah, I think you're right in a way. I think you nailed it on the head. I'm bored. I've just been building and building. And I'm looking for something else now. I'm looking for it to either just really grow exponentially, which maybe I need to do with somebody, or to augment it in some way so that it has more diversity. So I think you're right. I just can't figure out like which is the way to go.
I'm a big believer. I mean, I built the company as big as I can get. And then I bring smarter people around me
that do things that I don't. I think in life and in business, it's a puzzle. So you can't have the same as you in the room, but there's other parts that people bring to the table that make you and them together better. And I'm just a believer in that. I've been blessed to have a great team around me. I've made some mistakes and hired the wrong people before, and I've got to move on fast. But, you know, I think taking that chance and looking at it, because that's what it sounds like, is boredom. And we've all been there. I mean, I know Stephen will mention, like, we get to a point where, like, okay, I feel like got to get up, make the donuts, like the old Dunkin' Donuts. Like, you don't want to feel that way every day. So you've got to be challenged and pushed, or do something that's a little bit more exciting with people. I mean, this pandemic's got everybody upside down because people were sick of sitting in the house. I personally never sat in the house. Well, I did some, but I mean, I tried to live like life was still okay as much as I could. But even then, I was getting depressed and bored and needed to do something. That's how the podcast and the book came about. So you just got to find something. If it's, I think in business, if we, sometimes we do things and then we just run out of gas with it. We're like, all right, I need something bigger or more or something different. There's nothing wrong with changing your map. You just got to make that decision. Stephen, anything you want to add?
No, I love it. I think the one thing that I do to help clarify this, because I have run into this several times myself. That's part of the reason probably I have too many businesses now. But for me, I think I always start nowadays with one question. What do I want my life to stand for? What impact do I want it to make? And then I look at the, as a holistic approach, I answer that question. And for me, it's about serving the person that I used to be. That's what I want to do. It's what everything I want to do. So every business initiative, every direction, everything flows out of that one hub, if you will. And the reason I say that is because what I heard you say is you're hungering for community and collaboration. What I might would recommend you do before you bring on a partner right away is maybe hop into a mastermind that has consistent or vertical or horizontal integrations to the businesses you have now to gain greater perspective and actually see if those other environments are environments that you're actually passionate about where you can fight through some adversity rather than, you know, getting into something and maybe not being sure of it and then having to go backwards. You can test stuff like that in a very successful mastermind group with people that maybe are masters in the video space. You already have live event background. We do live events. You know what I'm saying? So maybe look at it from that perspective, but start with the overall end in mind. Like, what is it you want your life to stand for? So another thing that Steve Byer taught me a long time ago is like, if you're going to do anything, make the effort worth it and make the journey worth it. That way, any adversity or anything that comes down your path, you're ready to deal with and you're willing to fight through. And as a result, you'll get the benefit of the thing that you fought through, but you'll also get the lessons that you learned along the way that now you can share with the world at scale. So I'm a big fan of community and collaboration through mastermind first. Get to know somebody's integrity and character. Okay, I like Jason. Jason, let's do some business together. And then we do some business together, that kind of stuff. That's my personal approach. But I love what Jason said as well.
That's a cool approach. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Stephen. Thank you, Jason. You guys are top notch.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Holly. And then Chima, I see you are back. I hope I said your name correctly. Thank you for being here. What is your question for Jason and Stephen and the panel tonight?
Hi, sorry. I apologize. I think I'm actually working. So I had to take a call from the police. So I apologize for that, but I'm back now. My question is about, I have a brand that I'm trying to network and build. And it's kind of because it's transformed from a place of empowering people. I've had a life of helping young people through, you know, empowering projects, mainly in the arts and identifying things like their diversity. And it's not been so bad. But now I kind of wanted to project that now into a monetized platform where I can engage people to have fun donating to charity. And so I set up this platform called FundDonor. We haven't built it yet. We're going to crowdfund hopefully this year and try and get the momentum going around the message so that we can get people involved. And I'm having a difficult time engaging and networking, getting people on board with the concept. And I hear all the positives. I hear all the vibes. I hear so much encouragement in terms of what people, what we should be doing. But when I try and get that off people, I don't seem to get the traction. And I don't know what it is I'm not doing correctly. So I'm trying to get people on board with what it is so that they can give me some help in inspiring, you know, it's, even if it's encouragement, even if it's alternative methods of actually doing something maybe I'm not doing correctly, or guidance in terms of what we could do, or volunteering to help fine-tune things within the project plan. those are things I'm trying to do. Now, I'll give you a bit more background. When I went on safari, my first safari a few years ago, I wanted to see this school that was being built for charity because I heard so much about it. But when I got there, there wasn't anything. There was no school. There was no nothing. There was just some bare piece of land and a signboard. And when I asked around, I was told, you know, that school had been, the project was abandoned. It was a charity project. And $11 million had disappeared into thin air. And that was very sad to me because it's like, we all invest money in charities and we expect results from our investments. So for something like that to happen, but it's squandered. So how do we make these charities more accountable specifically for our money? And also, how do we get young people donating? And that was the thing that inspired me because I've been empowering young people all my life. And I've done all sorts of things all over the world, just trying to get people to explore their diversity through arts. And I thought I could bring these two things together and build this platform that will encourage these young guys to donate, to engage in acts of kindness, to do good things for charity, and also, you know, to give back at the same time. I'm now looking for how to promote this before we launch our crowdfunding, get as much interest going as possible so that we can have at least a successful launch and start pushing it out there. But I need encouragement. I need people to buy into the concept. If you look on my profile, there's material on there that should help people, at least with a concept. And then I can answer, I can help people, I can tell you what it is we're trying to do. I can do anything that's required to try and push this forward. I just need that help. I haven't had that much traction so far. And that's basically what I wanted to ask, how to do that.
Well, I think, and look, I appreciate what you do, Chaim. Anytime you want to market yourself, I remember the first time that I did a Facebook Live in 2016, like when it first came out, people were like talking trash, like, why would you do that? And I felt corny, where family and friends even thought I was weird. But what I learned, now that we have, you know, millions of followers between my company and podcast and myself over time, and, you know, 30,000 customers and over a billion in sales, all that, is you can never market enough. You have to market. You have to sit there and put yourself out there so much that your neighbors, your friends, your family are getting pissed off. Like, man, you're annoying me. Yep. Well, if I'm annoying you, then other people are seeing what I'm doing. So it is uncomfortable at first. It feels a little weird. I use the word, it douches me out a little bit, makes me feel a little awkward. And it used to. Now it doesn't. Now I'm used to it. I used to get embarrassed when I saw my face on a billboard or a commercial. Like, I'm like, I don't know if we should do that. Well, now I know it builds the brand and it helps the value. So I push as much as we can. And I've got a team that does that. But it started with me doing that. It started with me doing all our ads and me doing, I mean, you got to start somewhere and you got to brand yourself. You can never brand yourself enough. The people that you turn off by branding yourself too much, that's not your buyer anyways. You know, when I used to put out, when I ran a home security company, I used to have a flyer crew that would go out and put door hangers on the doors. And if I didn't get calls from homeowners that were pissed off that we put flyers on their doors or in the garage or taped it on the garage, then I knew they weren't doing their job, because all the pissed off people I got times that by 50 were the phone calls I got. So I knew it took one pissed off person to get 50 calls, which meant they were doing their job. It's the same concept of marketing. You need to push till you can't push no more. And people are annoyed. And all of a sudden, people start sharing your stuff more, and it grows, but it takes time.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I would dare say, so I have a lot of philanthropic ventures that I do. I'm heart first mentality. It's who I am as a person. Just been through too much not to be that way. That being said, I've learned along the way that people have a hard time investing in an idea that hasn't come along the way of having a proof of concept first. What can you do? What small action can you take to develop a proof of concept in the smallest form that you can show that it has traction? If you can get some kind of proof of concept in action, it doesn't have to be super large. I mean, maybe a focus group of 5 to 10 people just to kind of show it's interesting. Creating an actual monetization path to figure out how investors are going to get a return. I'm not saying that investors won't want to give because it's philanthropic. That might happen as well. But most investors that I know all want to return, even if they turn right around and give it back to the organization in a philanthropic nature. So I would say, what can you beta test, right? Because I'm a big believer, you test it, then you invest in it, then you scale it. So what can you test? And that'll go into your investment and hopefully allow you to scale it in the future. Hopefully that helps. Hey guys, I have to run here just a minute to keep up with some family commitments. Is that going to be
totally fine? Do what you got to do. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you, Stephen. We appreciate you being here. We're wrapping up right now.
Well, guys, with that, we are going to go ahead and close up the room. Thank you so much for joining us for the Entrepreneurship Q&A with Jason Waller, Stephen Scoggins, as well as Hala, Melissa, Holly, Joey, Dimple. Thank you guys so much for all being here. If you guys found value in tonight's conversation, please be sure to give Jason a follow here on Clubhouse. Check out his socials and show him some support with a follow, like, comment, and share for even more motivational tips, inspiring stories, and business building lessons. This room is hosted by Human Behavior. If you are not yet following Human Behavior, go ahead and tap the greenhouse just above our heads and give them a follow for even more conversations just like these. And guys, don't forget, check out Jason's podcast, True Underdog, at trueunderdog.com. And Jason, before we close up the room, do you have any final thoughts for us?
Absolutely. I challenge everybody. I mentioned it earlier. When you get a chance to meditate, whether you're on a drive, you're in the shower, whatever it is, for a few minutes a day, take the chance to pick two things that you're going to do different that aren't on your calendar that you're going to accomplish that day. It can be as easy as calling a family member, an old friend, going and having a deeper, important conversation with your child, something to make a difference that was not done the day before or anytime recently. I think if we all focus on doing two things, most of that should be personal. Sometimes it's business, but I like to challenge myself. It allows me to reach out to old friends, to keep in touch. It allows me to keep in touch. I get so busy with my current friends and care and you know, have compassion for people and see what's going on. You have to do that. We all get too busy grinding and we get stuck in that. I know I do. And life becomes a video game. And you don't want that. You want it to become real. You want to be able to have real emotion. You got to stay in contact with people. I'm challenging myself to do it every day. I would say take this chance, you know, starting tomorrow, to just try two things a day differently. Reach out to somebody or do something impactful for somebody else that you didn't do the day before.
Awesome. I love that. All right, guys. With that, I'm going to go ahead and close up the room. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, all of you. And thank you, Hala. Thank you, Melissa. Thank you, Holly, Joey, Dimple, Kate. Always awesome. Thank you, guys. Check out True Underdog Podcast. Bam!
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam. Damn. True Underdog. Damn. Damn.